Welcome to The Good Word. This week we continue our stories on the New Testament book of Hebrews. I'm Alden Thompson, Emeritus Professor of Old Testament in the Walla Walla University School of Theology. I'm your host and study guide author. My conversation partners are Brant Berglund and Dave Thomas from the Walla Walla University School of Theology. Our topic for this week is Jesus, author and perfecter of our faith. So as we look at Lesson 11, and this one is Hebrews 11 and 12, and it's really quite amazing, maybe even chapter 10 to 12, deals with the famous faith chapter. The official study guide for our Sabbath school lessons makes the statement that Hebrews 11 and 12 are probably the most loved chapters of the book. So let's ponder the faithful characters described in chapter 11. We can go through the characters and add names under each of the following headings. The results should stir up some lively class discussion. All right, and I put this three categories here. Hebrews version is glossier than the Old Testament original. And two, surprising omissions, people who are left out, and then surprising additions, Old Testament characters who surprisingly are listed among the faithful. Now, let's start, first of all, with the version where the Old Testament version is glossier, where the Hebrews version is glossier than the Old Testament original. Let's take Abraham. If you go to the Old Testament, what kind of character was Abraham?
I heard him once described as the father of three generations of liars.
Oh, my. Not only did he worship other gods, Joshua 24:2, he laughed, as did his wife Sarah, when the announcement came, and he was prepared to sacrifice Isaac. You know, from an idealist perspective, that's pretty catastrophic.
He certainly had his failings.
He had his failings, to be sure. And yet, you'd never guess that from Hebrews 11.
No, because he was a man who responded in faith to God's promise.
Yep, that's right.
And I find encouragement in that, Alden. We may have failings in our lives, but the trajectory of life is one of faithfulness to God is I think, what God is more interested in than occasional misdeeds or grand deeds.
Yeah, they can be all kinds of misfailings. And that's where the stories of the Bible, I think, can be so helpful, where you see God recognizing people. And children of Israel, for example, they were forever rebelling against God.
Yeah.
But God did not give up.
No.
In fact, if you were a non-believer coming to the story of Moses and Exodus and so on, you would wonder, how in the world did God put up with this kind of monkey business? Again and again and again. See, so there's no question that the stories of the Bible have that positive for thing. Then Moses was hidden by his parents. Now, there's an interesting wrinkle here because it says in Hebrews chapter 11 that Moses and his parents, I mean, it's really funny, his parents hid Moses because they were not afraid. And Moses fled Egypt because he was not afraid. Well, why in the world do you flee if you're not afraid? In fact, I wrote an article for one of our church papers once, less than a grain of mustard seed. Because you read the story there, Moses was not afraid of the wrath of Hebrews. But so Hebrews polishes those stories up and makes it feel very positive. You'd never guess that Sarah laughed from Hebrews 11. Now, that has to come from reading the original stories. And then Moses, we mentioned Moses, not being afraid of the anger's king, and yet in Exodus 2:14 it says Moses was afraid. Now, let's take a look at some surprising omissions. And I hadn't realized this before, but when they include Rahab, but they leave out both Joshua and Caleb. I mean, these are great guys, but they include Rahab and leave out Joshua and Caleb. So those are surprising omissions, faithful people in the Old Testament who don't make the grade for whatever reason. And then surprising additions, Old Testament characters who surprisingly are listed among the faithful. Rahab, she was a Canaanite and she was a prostitute. Gideon, idolater in his later years. Samson, a womanizer. and Shephthah of all things, who sacrificed his daughter because of an unwise oath. So all of those are included among the faithful. But let me come back.
And Alden Samson is also somebody who ended his own life by his own actions.
Sure. He is just astonishing when you think of all of that. Now, my opening question was, what can we learn from the way New Testament writers remodel Old Testament stories? Now, I was a bit gentle in the way I put that, but these all come from inspiration.
So the first thing we have to notice is the genre of Hebrews. Is it acceptable to allow the genre of Hebrews to be a story told in a homiletical form? And homiletical, as we know, homiletics, that of preaching, is sometimes more inspirational than actual. So I think we need to give room for inspiration to work like the Psalms.
Yep. And again, I would argue that we must lay them side by side. Instead of trying to harmonize them, let each one sit there, and then we can learn from each one's the separate ones. And that, I think, is very important.
And what's its value in the book of Hebrews' overall thrust? I think that's significant.
Yes, that's true. Now, how does one, and this is a kind of a personal thing, because as you know, I've written a lot of stuff on inspiration. How does one arrive at a view of inspiration that allows for these differences? How does one arrive at that?
I think you have to answer that question, Alden.
Well, I know how I arrived at it, but my whole teaching life has been to try to help people who are scared of what they see, and I want them to overcome their fear, and so they can be able to see that.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I would ask here about these specific passages you've brought up is, how significant are the differences? Are they ultra meaningful, or are they not that meaningful? Okay, one says that Abraham or that Moses was afraid, and the other says he was not afraid. Well, I'm not trying to harmonize necessarily, but I experience fear and confidence over the same issue at different times, over the exact same issue. So I let the author of Hebrews make his point and allow it to stand on its own without having to force it into a mold where it agrees with the Old Testament. It seems to be the best place, but also to recognize that this is all about human experience, and it's very complex, as nothing is as black and white as or clear as we sometimes like it to be.
I've put two, in my own understanding, not only reading the Bible, but getting some help. And as I look at my own experience, several teachers shaped my life. Certainly Richard Lidke did, Old Testament prof, and Malcolm Maxwell. He said, you don't need to be afraid of the critics when you go to university. You can be critical of the critics. See? So that was very helpful. But Ellen White has been a very helpful one, too, because of what she has written. Now, in selected messages in my book, Inspiration, and also my book, Escape from the Flames, how Ellen White grew from fear to joy and helped me do it, too. In both of those, I have put what I've called the classic statements, Adventism's classic statements on inspiration. What I now realize was that those were not classic statements. They have only become classic statements in recent years. And there's a lot of Adventist history that I could tuck in there. But there are two passages in Selected Messages, Book 1. It was a student that pointed out to me the first one is more affirming. The second one is more open. And what I found was that different students were gravitated towards one passage or the others. For those who fear was a bit, where there was a bit uneasiness, it was very helpful for Ellen White to said, don't worry about it. Everything's going to be fine. Others who need to have more room to explore. And so you find here, I put those two statements in the study guide, where Ellen White said, and this is one of the don't worry sections, no man can improve the Bible by suggesting what the Lord meant to say or ought to have said. Take the Bible the way it is. See. And then the other one, there is not perfect order or apparent unity in the Scriptures. Both of those are now included in selected messages. But if you look at the way those passages originally came into Selected Messages, Book 1, I asked one of the people at the White Estate about it, and they said those manuscripts were discovered, uncovered, in the mid-1880s, but Ellen White never published them while she was still alive. Now, maybe it's because they were too volatile. That's probably the reason. But they were in the estate at
Elmshaven?
Yeah, at Elmshaven. And, well, F.M. Wilcox went there, and he found these and decided to that they should be published. But it was very interesting. And he's a very conservative chap. If you read the 1919 Bible Conference minutes, he's very conservative. But in his first edition on Ellen White, they're not there. In the second one, he just simply say, some have seen these as being the most significant of Ellen White's writings. See, and I think in my own experience of how I have been helped, my own supervisor at the University of Edinburgh, when I was, he called me up one day and said, I want you to come and hear a lecture I'm giving. And he's an atheist. And he said, I want you to hear the lecture I'm giving. It's called The Demonic Element in Yahweh. And he went through in his lecture, and he's approaching it from a strictly an evolutionary point of view, and ticked off all these nasty stories in the Bible, in the Old Testament, where God was responsible for it. Some of those even I hadn't heard. See. But his thesis is one which really helped me. He says, the reason why you have God taking full responsibility for evil in the Old Testament is the danger that the people would go to polytheism. So rather than having that, letting that happen, God assumed full responsibility for evil. And I remember sitting in that lecture and all of a sudden having to hang on to my chair because the picture of what I've often used is the avalanche snapped into place, how God was reaching people where they were at different places. And that's become a mainstay in my thinking because of my atheist supervisor. So I think that the Lord has a great variety of ways in which he can work to help us move towards his kingdom.
And yet, Alden, I think that this chapter has a triumphant note. You know, my favorite part of this chapter is the end there where the author runs out of names and just starts describing people who were locked up and cut in two, and yet they're not worthy of this world.
Yeah. He brings it together and he says, God wanted to give all of us the reward together.
Yeah.
It's really a powerful statement there.
Yeah.
This week we compared the faithful heroes of Hebrews 11 with their stories as found in the Old Testament. The author of Hebrews was remarkably free in telling his stories, not hesitating to differ from the Old Testament originals. Again, we must not attempt to harmonize, but simply lay the stories side by side. Our topic next week is Receiving an Unshakable Kingdom. My thanks to my conversation partners, Dave Thomas and Brent Berglund, and to our program engineer, Harrison Kroschel, and to all of you for listening in for the Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.